everyone to another episode of For the Love of Cinema. My name, as always, Grayson Maxwell, and joining me...
Hey, everyone, it's me, Nick Morris.
Nick Morris, he loves America. Nick, how was your week, my friend?
Oh, man, you know, it's okay, it's just starting. You know, it's tough dodging all these Star Wars spoilers, Grayson.
Yeah. Dude, everything on the internet right now is Star Wars centric, and it should be. I'm not saying it shouldn't. It definitely should be, but it is very difficult to not. I've seen the movie. I'm gonna see it again, but it's very difficult for someone who hasn't seen it to avoid spoilers these days.
And I haven't seen it, man. And it is like pulling a child's teeth, man. You know.
I can imagine it's arguably one of the biggest movies in a long time, and like with all the tweets and all the, you know, Facebook updates, people constantly check. I'm not a huge social media guy, but I can imagine it's everywhere. Like, it's crazy. And a friend of mine who worked on it's always texting me, like, he's texting me, like, almost spoilers, but not, because he knows I'll kill him.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy. But, I mean, that's, you know, a big deal is a Star Wars movie coming out. I can't, if you lived under a rock and did not know that a tiny little movie named Star Wars came out, and it came out to a very good reception as far as box office. So, I mean, that's a big movie out this week.
Huge.
Don't know if you know that. Yeah.
As Donald Trump would say.
Huge. Yeah, Donald Trump. He is a man always in the news, never for anything good. And it upsets me because he's our president, but whatever. Yeah. All right, so we got a good thing to talk about today. We have, now this happened a while ago, but we have a corporate acquisition, Disney buying some of Fox, not all of it, for a very large number in the billions. It's not even a small number in the billions. Like, it's one of the biggest numbers I've ever seen. I can't even wrap my head. I know how many digits is in, you know, XX billions of dollars, but that's so much money to me. But
it was crazy. It happened earlier last week. While I'm sure the talks about it happened a lot earlier, maybe a couple months in it. But that's just crazy, man.
I agree. And we're going to get into it a little bit. We're going to... I just got scratching the surface today as more news rolls in. I got a buddy at Fox who said he could start feeding me some information on, like, companies that Fox has that, everything that's going on at Fox. I'm hoping to get updates from him. Yeah. So that's going to be exciting for weeks to come. And, as always, it's always nice to hear about Kevin Hart. The man's hilarious. He's in the new movie Jumanji, which opens in a few days. Well, tomorrow, if you listen to it on opening day, Tuesday. Or if you listen to this on the day the podcast was live, Tuesday, then it opens tomorrow, Wednesday. But, that's going to be a funny movie. I'm sure people will love it. But it's always nice to have Kevin Hart in the news. But let's jump right into the box office. Star Wars, The Last Jedi.
Oh, wow. What a surprise, surprise.
It's number one. No surprise there. It beat Coco, as very much anticipated, but... No budget given, which is weird, I think, but so I don't know the official budget, but worldwide, week one, $450 million.
Wow.
I think I said last week, I predicted 200. That really, really blew my prediction out of the water.
That's so awesome. It's, I don't know, man, we've had a lot of pretty decent, box office openings this year, but I think that one takes the cake.
No, that one definitely. I think that one takes the cake of almost all time. Mm-hmm. It's definitely one of the best ever. So no one would have guessed that wouldn't have been number one. I mean, that no one would have fought that for number one.
Yeah.
But here's what kills me. Ferdinand beat out Coco as far as box office. $111 million budget. Made so far worldwide and domestic, $19 million. Not good.
Yeah, that's a little rough.
Yeah, given
rough around the edges.
John Cena, Kate McKinnon, David Tennant, Bobby Cannavale, Gina Rodriguez. Jeremy Sisto, Anthony Anderson, Gabriel Iglesias. It just, the list just goes on. I feel like it should have opened stronger, but maybe you just opened at the wrong time.
Yeah, I think so. I think it opened at the wrong time. Maybe summer. Maybe this could have been a nice summer opening. You know, nice anime movie to get the summer off. You know, there's bowls, whatever else is through in there. I don't know, John Cena.
Yeah, bowls, John Cena, all kinds of good stuff happening there. Well, I hope Ferdinand does better. Maybe after everyone sees Star Wars and gets sick of Coco, Ferdinand will get some more box office. I sure hope so. Speaking of Coco, number 3 this week, number 1 last week, Coco dropped 2 spots. So far, worldwide 450. Not a small number. I'm sure that's doing wonderfully. The domestic is only 150, so it's doing much better foreign, which is to be expected, especially in the native country of Mexico and territories south of the United States. It's doing much better. So I'm hoping people are really enjoying that. It's a damn good movie.
Oh yeah, definitely is.
Number 4 this week, number 3 last week. It's still in the top 5, Nick. I tell you, for opening on a month ago, a movie like Wonder still being in the top 5, I think is a big deal for this time of year.
Yeah, that's some pretty crazy stuff. I think that's awesome. Because I know both of us enjoyed Wonder.
Yeah, it's hard not to enjoy Wonder, as a matter of fact, yeah. I think. Go ahead, sorry.
Did you think it would, it would still be in front of Justice League and all that?
No. I mean, personally, because I liked it more than Justice League, yes. But if I was sitting down making an estimate based on the environment today as far as box office and how superhero crazy we are, I know. No, I never would have thought that.
Exactly.
But
crazy. But yeah, keep going.
I took a few Ubers this week, and there were some. I got into an Uber with a young mother who asked. I told her what I was in the city for, and she said, "Oh, I just saw Wonder. What'd you think?" And she couldn't stop saying good things about it. She's like, "It was wonderful, heartwarming." And she loves the book. Her son loves the book too. So I'm glad that they really hit that one out of the park as far as a faithful adaptation.
That's really good. Awesome.
I'm glad. So good for you, Wonder. Still kicking ass. Justice League right behind it, number 5. Last week, number 2. $635 million. It's actually doing better than I thought it would, given the initial start. I thought it'd be strong. I didn't think it'd be $635 million strong, even after a month. I didn't think it would hit the $500 million mark. I mean, I really didn't, but it has, and I'm glad it has. A huge host of actors, great cast. I look for more in the DC Extended Universe from here on out.
So yeah, most definitely.
Hope we get it.
I still get a couple of my friends they're going to see these movies eventually, and I just had a friend watch Justice League, talked it up a lot. We had our little talk about what it is and how it went for each of us, but he seemed to really enjoy it, and I didn't want to crush his soul.
Well, no. There's, I mean, is he a comic book fan?
No. He's not a huge, not into comic books. I mean, obviously, he's been caught by the superhero movies that are out, Marvel, DC, whatever. I guess he's just a superhero fan.
Oh, good. Well, like I said, it's hard for me to separate. Now, this is just personally. Sometimes it's very difficult for me to separate what I like from good or bad. That's just, I really have to sit down with myself and like, yeah, just because I like it doesn't make it good. I constantly have to remember that. Yeah. But I mean, if someone likes it, then more power to them. You know, if they like the character of Justice League, if they like what happened, then great. I think for my own personal, I was comparing it directly to the Avengers universe. And when you compare it to the Avengers universe, it really comes up short. That's, in my personal opinion, sure. It just comes up short in every way possible. So, that's just me. But I certainly wouldn't knock anyone who enjoyed it. It was a much anticipated movie for sure. And number six, glad to say, still top 10, Daddy's Home 2.
awesome.
69 million, 157 million worldwide. Not much more to say about that one. Again, I enjoyed Mel Gibson. I hope everyone enjoyed Mel Gibson's starting to be more of a mainstream guy in films again. Really excited. That's good. I'm sure we're going to get another one of those. I've no doubt we'll get a third Daddy's Home at some time. Maybe not as quick as we got the second Daddy's Home 2,
mm-hmm.
but because we got this first one in 2016 and the second one in 2017, so I'm guessing it's... No, we may have gotten 2015, but I don't think we're going to see the third one as quick as we saw the second one, if there is a third one. I don't know where that line was. The studio was like, well, once it passes this line, box office, we make another one.
So. There it is, automatically. It's in the contract.
Number seven, Thor Ragnarok. It is, I would have thought, given how this started out, it would have hit the billion-dollar mark pretty quick. I think it's starting to fizzle, and it's sitting tight at $841 million.
It's respectable.
That's a very respectable number.
Yes.
You cannot, you know, that is a very, that's, it accomplished its goals, let's say that.
Mm-hmm.
Off of $180 million budget, let's just say, as of 260 or 70, that paid for everything, the production budget, the advertising, everything. So it's made a pretty good chunk of money for Marvel. Marvel's family now, I mean, Disney's family, which includes Marvel, just got a whole lot bigger. So we're going to talk about what the acquisition may mean for the future of those movies. And I'm happy to say The Disaster Artist, number 8, number 4 last week, fell a few spots, still in top 10. Just made $15 million worldwide. I'm a little disappointed at the number, given how everyone was talking this movie.
Yeah, given the hype.
I'm a little disappointed in the box office, given the hype. I would have thought, based around the hype that I just heard in my close circle of friends chatter, that it would have been, the box office would have been a lot bigger than it was starting out. But foreign, 2.7 million domestic, domestic 12.9 million. I mean, that's not strong numbers.
And number nine, Murder on the Orient Express. I'm glad it's still in the top 10.
We've talked about this one at length. Great cast, great visual. I like the fact that Kenneth Branagh made it. I think he's a very promising director. I looked for a pretty bright future from him, given what he's given us already. But
mm-hmm.
Now that's number nine. Go ahead, Nick.
Internationally, domestically, how we doing?
Oh, how we doing worldwide? Good question. I did not say that. Well, off of a $55 million budget, $297 million. It's just shy of 300. I'm sure it'll hit 300 million before the holidays are over. It's only, you know, 2.1 million away. So
yeah.
That's definitely, I'm sure the studio is very happy with that one. And number 10, Lady Bird. Nick, you said you liked this one.
Oh yeah, dude. Lady Bird was pretty decent, man. How we doing with Lady Bird?
You know what? Only has a domestic release, 25.9 million, almost 26.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. This movie was interesting, definitely, to say the least. A movie that I say go see, definitely. A lot of debates on this movie, you know, whether it's good or bad, but it's been getting a lot of buzz for awards.
Really?
Yeah,
glad to hear that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, we got a lot of business going on in Hollywood. There's no doubt about that.
That's never going to stop being a very weird, a very, very political business either.
Yeah.
Jeez, it's all, jeez, yeah.
I know one of the things was, you know, the Golden Globes. I believe they either happened recently or they're about to happen. Well, one thing was Greta Gerwig, who directed Lady Bird, she was snubbed, I guess. I mean, the movie was pretty fantastic. I thought she did a wonderful job. But when you think about people talking about snubbing directors or movies or actors or whatever someone's getting snubbed. You can't just look at the person by who they are or, you know, the movie. Well, I think that's exactly what you got to look at, is the movie. You know, because there's four or five other great movies that are up against it, you know. It's a competition, man.
Well, no, I totally agree. I mean, one thing I always remember is the talk about when Cinderella Man was pushed out of that year's Oscars. I was very upset because it was wrapped around that whole Russell Crowe and the throwing the phone at the bellboy and breaking his nose because he was mad at his wife, and like that movie just got completely, like, that movie deserved awards.
Yeah.
That movie, like, as much as 2 and 2 is 4, that movie deserved a lot of awards, and it got, mm-hmm. you know, it just, so you're right. I think we should, it's like, for example, it's like a teacher grading a student's paper, and because that teacher maybe doesn't like the student, giving that student a lower grade, when it should just be solely focused on the work handed in for judgment.
Yeah.
I mean, but we're human, and we are unfortunately subject to that kind of thing. So, other notables in the top 20, The Shape of Water, number 12, Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, number 13, Just Getting Started, number 14, not a big start. We're going to talk about that one today. The Man Who Invented Christmas, also number 18. We're going to talk about that one today. And, you know, number 20, I, Tanya. Not a good start for that one either, but hopefully they creep up. Hopefully they creep up. Now, coming out this past week, as you know, Star Wars The Last Jedi, Ferdinand and Gaudi. Didn't see much about Gaudi in the news.
Oh, wow. No.
No, not at all, huh?
I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, you forgot about Gaudi. You forgot about it.
I forget about Gaudi.
December 20th to 22nd, this week actually, we have Jumanji, Greatest Showman, Pitch Perfect 3, Downsizing, Father Figure. I couldn't be more excited for Greatest Showman. I'm excited about myself. Christmas Day, Phantom Thread, opens limited, Molly's Game, a little limited. January 5th, the first week in the new year, Molly's Game goes wider, Insidious, The Last Key. And then the 12th of January, we have the Tom Hanks movie, The Post, Liam Neeson, Commuter, Proud Mary, Paddington 2, the 19th of January, 12 Strong, Forever My Girl, and Den of Thieves. And January 26th, we have Maze Runner, The Death Cure, the third movie in the Maze Runner trilogy, Arctic Justice, Thunder Squad. And if you're wondering what that is, you should look it up. It looks hilarious. And so that means we have 1 week until Jumanji, Greatest Showman, Downsizing, 2 weeks till Phantom Thread, Molly's Game, Insidious, Last Key, 3 weeks, The Post, The Commuter, 4 weeks, and just over a month, 12 Strong, Den of Thieves. Now, here is some interesting bit of news, Nick. Disney has bought some of the Fox network. 20th Century Fox and Fox TV will now be under the Disney umbrella. The 20th Century Fox, 1935 it started, and in 1949 they started, Fox TV started, Bang TVs. Now, recent notable acquisitions by Disney are, of course, the Marvel franchise and Lucasfilm. That's the, you know, those are two really huge ones.
Yes. Oh, wow. This is some crazy news, man. You know, especially if you are a huge fan of the Marvel Universe, there are definitely some steps that are going to be taken in these next few years. And, I mean, I think Disney's on their way, you know, to, they're doing great. I mean, Thor was awesome.
Disney's on their way to complete world domination with far as,
yeah, exactly,
as owning companies of the world. I mean, parents already trust Disney almost implicitly, like without any hesitation. So, of course, they raise future generation of kids to trust Disney without any hesitation either. So, I mean, yeah. Disney's only going to get bigger. And if you're wondering, there was an original number of $52.4 billion, Nick. So, Nick, I know, you know, that's pocket change to you, but to the rest of us, that's a lot of money, man. I mean,
Oh, man.
I mean, I know you're wobbling around, you know, swimming naked through your billions in your house.
You know how much gum you could buy for $52.4 billion, Grayson?
I think you could buy all the gum in the world. I'm not positive, but I think.
You could buy all the gum in the world with all the money in the world.
So, after all was said and done, with the original number of $52.4 billion and assuming some of the debt, assuming some of Fox's debt and other various acquisitions within the Fox company, it came out to $66 billion in total. I have no words for how big that number is. Like, that is just insane, that number.
Oh, man.
I know, but...
The price to pay.
Well, yes, the price to pay. I mean, it's a huge upfront cost, but it's going to pay off. And here's why. Now, Deadpool, Fantastic Four, and X-Men were all under the Fox umbrella. Now they're all where they should be with, you know, I mean, since Disney has purchased the Marvel Universe, and they're going to put everything together, it's good that the Deadpool, Fantastic Four, and X-Men are all under the same roof as the rest of the Marvel franchise.
Yeah, very true.
So, that's exciting.
It's about time, really.
It really is about time, and like I said, I'm not an original comic book guy. I don't know how far the lore goes as far as... I know that there are some members of X-Men that are Avengers. I don't know if there's any Fantastic Four members that are part of the Avengers. I would assume maybe one is, or two.
Yeah, I'm not too sure.
I'm not either. Mm-hmm. So, we're definitely going to look to see now that, of course, now that they recently got Spider-Man as well, obviously because he's been in Civil War and he was going to be in this Avengers movie. That's exciting.
Could this mean that we're going to get a new adaptation of Fantastic Four?
No, that's dead.
You think so?
After two failed attempts, I'd say that's dead.
Oh, man.
I don't put it past either Disney or Fox. I don't know if Fox had anything in the works. It is going to be grandfathered in and carried through. I don't know. I don't put it past them to try again, but the first one was semi-successful. The second one, it didn't make as much money as the first, but people still enjoyed it. But we did not see a third one in that Fantastic Four trilogy. But then the reboot came. That movie was marred with production problems, and it was marred with all kinds of stuff. It was not well received. So,
In retrospect, though, I think we'll be fine with the movies that, you know, Disney Marvel decides to make. Especially with, I believe they're concerned with Deadpool being R-rated. I think they're okay with that, especially how Deadpool turned out.
Well, of course. I mean, they love the reception it got, and they love the box office it made, so... I mean, if it didn't make as much money, they might make a few changes. But why? If it ain't fixed, don't broke. Or if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know that old adage. So but that also leaves open Doctor Doom and Galactus can come in now as villains in the Avengers franchise, or even weaving in and out. You know, X-Men can now be Avengers. Also, with the acquisition, that means that Disney now owns Avatar.
Oh,
so, so good old Jimmy Cameron is taking. He's taking orders from Disney. I don't know. I think Fox pretty much let him go on an open... Like, they just gave him the shortest leash possible. Or, like, I'm sorry, the longest leash possible. Let him do whatever he wanted. I don't know if that's going to be the same, but I don't assume much would change, given how big he is.
Quick question, Grayson.
Shoot.
If James Cameron were to direct a live-action Disney film, what would you like him to remake?
Ooh. A live action. Well, my big three have always been Beauty and the Beast, Lion King, and Aladdin. And Lion King, Aladdin, are in production now. Beauty and the Beast has already been done, but that's a tough one. That came out of nowhere. You know what? Give me a few minutes. I'll try to think. I'll try to actually think on that. Another Disney movie I really love. If he was going to take over one, maybe Little Mermaid, because that's kind of Aquaman, and he already kind of made Aquaman in an Entourage, so maybe Little Mermaid, I don't know.
Okay.
But I have heard that Little Mermaid they're moving forward with the live-action version already. Boy, if I had to choose another one, you know what? Just because I love it, and it's not getting any attention right now, maybe The Fox and the Hound.
Yeah, okay, all right.
That's got some pretty deep and emotional scenes. You know, when Copper is trying to kill Todd with on the train tracks with the bear, and then Todd has to save Copper. Copper? yeah, that's, I mean, maybe Fox and the Hound? I don't know. I'd have to look at it as a complete list, but...
That's awesome. Okay, I respect that. I dig it.
Also, that means Disney has access to the Star Wars theme again. So they may be able to. So we may see a recut of the beginning of Force Awakens, the Rogue One Star Wars story, and The Last Jedi. With the theme music, inserted where it belongs. That also means they have tons of franchises. I mean, some notable ones among them. The Planet of the Apes franchise, which just finished up. I mean, there could be another movie. The Alien franchise, which is never going to die. Kingsman, Die Hard, Home Alone, Ice Age, and Rio all have life outside of... I mean, they all still have life. So,
yeah.
And with Ice Age and Rio, that's Blue Sky Animation, Blue Sky Studios, that's animation. So Disney now owns that. So, I mean, that's... I mean, and with their... Not... terribly recently, but recently announced streaming service, I gotta be honest with you. I think people are gonna be more attracted to Disney streaming service than they are Netflix.
Yeah, well, I mean, dude, I don't know what it is with Netflix, but they keep raising their prices, man. And I mean, people will pay, but not everyone.
You know what kills me is, I had a professor that. He was one of the first people I ever knew to get on Netflix. And this was like when Netflix just started. It was, you know, I mean, so long ago that he got into the like, it was $1.99 locked in for life. And I saw him randomly when I was home for Thanksgiving, and I asked him about that. Because I always make it a point to ask him about that, because I feel like it's interesting. And he said he just got a price hike.
Oh.
I said, how did they... pull that one on you? And he said he fought it for a little while, but they said that in the original contract there were loopholes.
Oh, of course.
For their own benefit. So I thought that was, I'm like, are you kidding me? Gee Louise.
that's crazy.
That's just so like squirmy. Like that doesn't sit right with me. I don't know, but
that just goes to show you that you also need your lawyer to look over your streaming services.
You shouldn't, but you do, right. It's just, that upsets me a great deal. But, I mean, it is what it is, but my major concern for the streaming service is how much will it cost? You know, Disney, with the Disney name, I'm worried that they're going to shoot themselves in the foot in the very beginning and put a premium, you know, a premium price like $29.99 or something. That's outrageous.
That would, exactly. I mean, now, don't get me wrong, it's not that Disney wouldn't deserve that much money. It's just, they have a crazy archive, obviously.
And their archive just got much bigger as well, so.
Yeah.
I mean, with a bunch of franchises that people love, you know, if there's one place you can go to get all the Alien movies, all the Kings movies, all the Die Hard movies, all the Home Alone movies all the time, you know, that makes your... Especially if you love any of those, you know, I mean, that's just some of the franchises, some of the dozens and dozens of franchises. Then, I mean, is Disney going to own the world here soon? My goodness. when you see Disney start trying to buy some of the huge studios, then it's going to be in a very different place as far as the world of entertainment. It's going to be very different.
Is this the apocalypse happening?
Well, no. I think Disney will do it right. I mean, it's just anyone's game now. Like, we're uncharted territory. But, and so, Nick, how much do you think Star Wars opening night was, the Thursday midnight show? How much do you think that brought in? Or the Thursday night shows. How much do you think those brought in for Star Wars? The Last Jedi.
Worldwide? Probably... I want to say no less than 100 million.
No, 43. 40, no, for, oh, just for the just for the opening Thursday nights. 43 the million.
Release.
Yeah. Well, the 8 and 10 p.m. releases.
Yeah.
That's
100 million was a little steep, but
although you weren't wrong, because on Friday, The Last Jedi made 107 million, so in 2 days, That brings a total up to 150, 160 million in 2 days. Jeez. No, no, I'm sorry, in a day and a night. That's what it brings the total up to.
That is awesome.
And I couldn't help but notice this. A buddy of mine pointed this out, who's a major critic. The Last Jedi got 93 on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's being called the new Empire Strikes Back. Now, previously, Empire Strikes Back is probably the one that people would agree with the most in the original trilogy. I mean, those prequels, we don't even mention those. But, I mean, the Empire Strikes Back, I've heard arguments that it was the quintessential American-made movie. If you're going to demonstrate what American cinema was before the 79, the Empire Strikes Back was probably the best movie to show someone this is what American cinema is. But now they said this one is actually better than Empire. I'm not sure I agree with that, but it has 93% Rotten Tomatoes. I bet you J.J. Abrams loved that one. He didn't make it. Although Force Awakens on the Thursday night, or the Thursday, or the night before opening, then the day of, it made $119 million. So it made more money, but received less critically well than The Last Jedi.
I've been seeing 50-50. I've tried not to look at anything, because I don't want to spoil the movie for myself. I'm going to see it tomorrow. I have been looking up a couple of theories. You see something that sparks your interest, whether it's clickbait or not. But let me ask you what you think. Mace Windu isn't dead, but he is Snoke. How would that fare with you? What comes to mind when you hear that?
I mean, are we talking purely from a speculation point of view, like this could be it, or what point of view are we coming from?
Well, there was a mere theory that, when talking about all the logistics and everything about it, it kind of made sense. It made sense, but I don't know. I wish I would have wrote it down, but I can't give you any hardcore facts.
No, I think if that turns out to be a reality that really is, I would be pretty upset.
Yeah, especially for you, which you've seen The Last Jedi, so it sounds I can tell by the inflection of your voice.
I want to talk a little about Last Jedi this week as possibly can. There are a lot of cool things going on in that movie. A lot of things I don't really agree with, but again, I'm not the writer, I'm not the director. Just personally, I've always had my hang up with Star Wars only because it's so big, and I just blind devotion to something that has such big plot holes. And this movie has massive plot holes. Like, you could drive a truck through these plot holes. But I mean, it is what it is. I've always enjoyed the Star Wars franchise. Have I always liked it? No, I kind of go back and forth with it. We have a love-hate relationship. But, Star Wars, it's a very important franchise in history, so I try to approach it as such every time.
Very true, very respectable.
Now,
all right, yeah.
That's going to be the topic of the show next week, so I don't want to get into it now, but this week. But also, Ferdinand. So, and one last bit of note before we get into briefly movies is Kevin Hart. He would like to be into another Robin Williams movie. If you're wondering what that is, he's in Jumanji that opens very soon, and I'm sure a lot of people will really love it. The trailer is hilarious. I listen to Kevin Hart stand up.
Well, Kevin Hart is hilarious.
Yeah, he's so funny.
Him and The Rock on screen together.
I just recently watched Central Intelligence too, and that was, I thought that movie was, it had some laughs. Not as funny as I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
Seeing it for the first time recently, but there are some really, really funny parts where I almost peed myself because of Kevin Hart. Because of Kevin Hart. Like, his line delivery he has great line delivery, but he's also a comedian. So, he's got that art down. But, he said he'd like to do, and this might surprise you, Nick, this might surprise our listeners, Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh, wow. It's funny you should say that, because I, you know, just the other day, I watched Mrs. Doubtfire fully.
Wait, for the first time, or?
For the first time. I mean, you know, I would catch it off and on, you know, maybe halfway through, maybe a little bit of the start, maybe a little bit of the ending. And I hate doing that, because, you know, if I see a movie, I want to finish it and watch the full movie. But throughout the years, man, I can never catch this one fully.
Well, I'm glad you did. What'd you think?
It wasn't too bad. Miss Doubtfire, man, Robin Williams, he does something crazy, you know, just to see his kids. Very respectable.
No, I mean, he's a good dad, you know, he's a good dad.
Exactly. I don't know, man. I thought it was hilarious. Robin Williams is one of those people, you know, obvious, like Kevin Hart. He has a huge background in comedy. R.I.P. Robin Williams.
The late, the very great Robin Williams.
Yeah.
He certainly is a man whose career, that noise, they're fixing a freight elevator downstairs. It's just, his library of work is incredible. You know, he's, to his credit, he's got a wonderful library of work. And looking at some trailers, as always, I try to pick trailers that are, you know, coming up, the one or two that are coming up, and The Greatest Showman, directed by Michael Gracie, Hugh Jackman, Zac Efron, Michelle Williams, Rebecca Ferguson, Zendaya, story of P.T. Barnum in the beginning of what we know as the show business. I think the trailer is phenomenal. I'm always sucked in by these really phenomenal trailers and the movies, and usually when I talk about how good the trailer is, the movie turns out not to be so good. So, yeah. I mean,
I hope that's not the case for The Greatest Showman.
Well, given how big the movie is, when it's releasing, you know, the size of the cast, Hugh Jackman, Zac Efron, not to say that Zac Efron's huge, but Hugh Jackman is definitely huge.
Yeah.
I'd be willing to bet this movie does very well. Very well. Oh, yeah.
Box office. And, you know, I don't know, man. I know, just like you, I have strong hopes for this movie.
I really do.
And like, you know, like you said, this trailer pulls you in. For me, it's that song, you know, that I can't wait to hear in the movie, which I hope it is. If it's not, I'm gonna be pretty upset.
I'm sure it will be. I'm sure it's either gonna be in the movie or the credits. One way or the other, it's in the movie somewhere.
Yeah.
And moving on to Pitch Perfect 3. It comes out this week, actually. Trish C. directs it. Anna Kendrick, Ruby Rose, Brittany Snow, Hailee Steinfeld, Alexis Knapp, Elizabeth Banks, Anna Camp, John Lithgow, Rebel Wilson, and the list just goes on. I'm really excited for this, for the first reason being, the first two were so entertaining. They were so much fun. Wonderful music, you know, just great musical talent. I love it. I love everything about the two first two Pitch Perfect movies. I love Anna Kendrick. She is fantastic. She is great.
Yes.
She is very hard to beat as far as talent on screen. She's one of the better young women in Hollywood today. I think one of the top four or five strongest. So I would love, and you know what's funny is like, she was in that first Twilight movie.
Yeah.
that's what I think is funny is she, like, she got her almost her start in Twilight. She got that part and then, of course, blew up because of that. But I'm glad that she was in Twilight.
She's beautiful. I'll say that.
And the Bellas reunite for another competition, only this time it's voice and instrument, and they seem to be unprepared for the instrument part. But, I mean, there wouldn't be a movie if they weren't caught off guard somehow.
Did they bring the cups with them?
We will see, Nick.
Possibility of a cup song.
We will see. We will see, Nick. and the very, I think the less anticipated than the first one, the third 50 Shades Freed movie in the trilogy. I said that weird, but the third movie in the 50 Shades trilogy, 50 Shades Freed, directed by James Foley, Jamie Dornan, hashtag always my Christian, Dakota Johnson, Kim Basinger, Ariel Kebble, Luke Grant. I actually don't have a problem with Jamie Dornan being Christian Grey. I know a lot of people were upset with it. I know a lot of people didn't like it, but I was okay with it, to be honest.
I haven't seen any of the 50 Shades movies. You know, don't be disappointed in me. It's just my mother and my stepfather went to see it on Valentine's Day. So I was a little sickened by the whole franchise.
I don't blame you. And you're not really... The thing about the 50 Shades movies, and it is made, especially with viewing this trailer, as you've seen, anyone who's seen this is... The third movie highlights what this entire franchise is. It's no more than just... It's like a high school drama.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and no drama you have in high school matters. Nothing, you know, it's funny, in high school, we are at our peak as far as, like, what we want sexually, and we're the ugliest we're ever going to be in high school. With all that,
pizza,
you know,
face, man.
Yeah, with all, you know, pizza face, and but like it's no more than just high school drama and he said she said, and you know, and that's one thing I can't get away with, especially where the second movie went into, is we leave the scorned character, Luke Grimes' character, he's standing out in the cold smoking a cigarette, looking down on where Christian and Anastasia are. Like, do you get any more WB drama than that? You know, like One Tree Hill, and do you get any more, like, get any more like that?
Basically, you could see this on the CW.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. this is no different than parts of Everwood or One Tree Hill or any of those other, you know, teen drama, Pretty Little Liars, you know, it's no different. I mean, I'm definitely going to watch it. I'm not going to walk into it with anticipation. I will definitely have candy, popcorn, a drink.
Yes.
I don't know. It just depends. I like Jamie Dornan. I like Dakota Johnson. I think Jamie Dornan can do a lot better than the 50 Shades franchise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think.
I mean, not a huge name, but I mean he's pretty successful. Is this, you know, is the 50 Shades franchise pretty much? I guess you could say reliable work. You know.
Well, I mean, this is the last one. I'm sure they've all made very nice paychecks on this one. I'm sure they have made great money on this movie. So I don't think they're going to care too much.
What do you think happens when he's walking down the street, you know, and there's just these, you know, these 50-year-old ladies. He walks past some Jamie Dornan, you know, looking all cool, probably wearing sunglasses, I'm assuming. You know, these 50-year-olds are like, oh my god, it's him. It's Christian Grey.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of the magic. I mean, you're talking about, like, Jamie Dornan walking down the sidewalk with glasses on, like, oh my god, it's Christian Grey, or we're talking about in the movie somewhere.
Oh, no, like in real life.
Oh,
you know,
no, I mean, that's...
These women are hot and bothered by the movie, Grayson.
Well, I mean, I can see that. And in the same way that when Harry Potter was, like, only a few movies in, it was reported that Malfoy's actor would, when he was out in public, people would run up to him and be mean to him and tell him to leave Harry alone and...
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I guess it's the same. You just get so lost in a franchise you love that they become the character. The actors become the character as well. So,
yeah.
I mean,
sometimes that's a little harder to shake.
I think so. That
some people would like.
Yeah, you're not wrong. But that movie is extremely anticipated. I know people are really looking forward to that. I hope it lives up to their expectations. I hope people who are fans of the book. The movie lives up to the book. I really do. So, now, moving on to two movies this week, Nick. The Man Who Invented Christmas. Did you get a chance to see that one?
I did not.
Well, luckily, I did.
Oh.
I actually really enjoyed it, truth be told. I really enjoyed... I was kind of going in mixed. I didn't really know what to expect, to be honest. But Dan Stevens... plays Charles Dickens, Christopher Plummer, Ebenezer Scrooge, Jonathan Pryce plays Charles' father, John Dickens, Miriam Margoyles plays Mrs. Fisk, Simon Callow Leach, Ian McNeice plays Chapman, and Morfydd Clark plays Kate Dickens, and we have Annette Badland playing Mrs. Fezziwig. I'm going down the list because these are all characters you know from the story. Donald Sumter, Jacob Marley, Bill Patterson, Mrs. Grimsby. The list just goes on. There's a lot of recognizable names because you know the story so well. You've seen the story 100 times. Personally, my favorite telling of the story is the Mickey Mouse version. I don't know if anyone remembers that, but I try to watch that once at Christmas. I think I love that version of it. I love that version.
Is that with Scrooge McDuck?
Correct. Yep. Scrooge McDuck. All right. Yeah, and his clerk, Bob Cratchit. And Tiny Tim. Yeah, I really enjoy that one. With the Ghosts of Christmas, but like they're Goofy, and one of them's Pete, one of them's Goofy. Actually, two of them are Goofy. I don't remember, but it's been a while. It's been obviously years since I've seen it. But so main event. Back to the movie. We have here's what I like about it. There's a lot of things I liked about it. I liked, even though this is not how it came about. I like that this might be some of the way he imagined the characters and the circumstance. Yeah. I think it's always fun. And a movie I'm going to reference is Finding Neverland, when the guy who wrote Peter Pan was trying to, he was having a part of his own life. And when he met this family, he got the inspiration for Captain Hook and got the inspiration for the Lost Boys of Neverland. And I like to think that stuff is true, how they came up with it. Because it's kind of a heartwarming way to tell the story.
Oh yeah, definitely. Just like this, you know, it's a lot of people are, they're inspired by their everyday lives. If you can throw a creative spin on it, you can make a hell of a story.
Exactly. I'm a little mystified as why this movie hasn't done better than it's done. I really don't understand why people aren't looking forward to this movie, as I would say, given how we all know this story. We were all forced to read it. Even if you weren't forced to read it, you've experienced it in some way.
Yeah.
So that's what I like. I mean, Dickens is a very famous author, and the movie picks up just after he's released Oliver Twist. People are thinking him as one of the best authors alive. He's doing a tour in America, where the opening scene shows you that he's not really a big fan of. That was a big, sorry. They've been working on the failover all day. I've been trying to film this episode around it, but it's hard. But it's the movie starts with him just after the successful Oliver Twist, and he's looking for inspiration for another book. And his publishers are on him about it, and he's just coming up short with inspiration. He's really having a tough time. Dickens has a decent sized family already, several kids. He has a wife. His father, Jonathan Pryce, who actually I think is, I love Jonathan Pryce and Christopher Plummer as John Dickens and Ebenezer Scrooge, respectively. I love Christopher Plummer and everything he's in. I'm very glad that if they did choose to replace Kevin Spacey, and they did, that they chose Christopher Plummer to do it and all the money in the world. So, I mean, Christopher Plummer, he's a very solid guy. Every performance you see him, you're always happy with his performance. So, I mean, so I love, obviously, Christopher Plummer, love Jonathan Pryce. Jonathan Pryce plays John Dickens. He's always in need of money. He's always broke. Although that's not abundantly clear to Charles until much later, he's just not able to see it. He's so wrapped up in his own family and his own stories. And his father kind of is the anchor point for the whole movie in a way. It's kind of, there's a few big misses, I think, and hit that character is one of them. As we all know, the Christmas Carol has three, as the story unfolds, Ebenezer Scrooge, who on the night of Christmas Eve is taken into a complete revelation. The ghost of Christmas past, the future, I'm sorry, the past, the present, and the future, and I think is one of the biggest misses in this entire film is, so Dickens is really struggling
tried to come up with a character, and he's wandering the streets. He goes out to get fresh air, and he sees these kids forced to work in the workhouses, and he tries to stop it from happening once, and he chases this guy with these kids through a building into an alley, and then he walks into this graveyard, and he's able to see, and he sees this old, miserable son of a gun. You know, that's just his, and that's kind of his inspiration for Scrooge. And then, as he's pacing in his study, the character Scrooge comes to him. As you see in the trailer, he just appears, Christopher Plummer playing him, and then he talks, he's talking to him, finally figuring out, okay, this is my character, right? Focus the entire story around this, the character. And then, of course, someone knocks on the door, and he's interrupted, and he's got to find that inspiration again. He's got to talk to Scrooge. And as we see, Scrooge kind of takes him in through, he discovers the Jacob Marley, the Ghost of Christmas Past, is the same lawyer that is helping Dickens with a copyright infringement case.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, then we see the Ghost of the Present, and he comes up with that, and he's jovial, and then the Ghost of the Future, it's one of the, those were all in the story. What I was hoping as I was seeing these unfold was because we were being introduced to those characters, they couldn't be the character, they were the characters in the book, so they couldn't be, so I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if Dickens himself in this story is going through his own Christmas Carol, three versions of himself were the Ghost of Christmas Past, Present, and Future. I don't think it translated as well as they wanted it to, unfortunately. I thought, I was getting really excited, and I thought that was where it was going. I just don't think it translated as well as it may have been attempted. Scrooge becomes a race against time when he's trying to find the inspiration to write the story before the Christmas deadline, get it in publishers immediately. So, and he's having money troubles. This is, you know, his family is just moved into a bigger house. His wife's pregnant again. I mean, pretty much worst case scenario with anyone, for any guy who doesn't have any money. So, I mean, it's, London is, there is, I like the set pieces too. I've always liked old London set pieces. None of it looks green screened. It all looks authentic, you know, stage, set deck, you know, dressing stage. It all looks authentic that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I did like about it. Where the movie falls flat, except for me, is, well, where the movie falls flat for me is, it just, at parts, just bumbles on. You know, it doesn't get to the snappy parts quick enough. It doesn't. When the movie does something right, it doesn't let it sink in for more than a few seconds before it moves on, and then slows down again a great deal.
So it gives parts that they're building up to no justice.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then it lets the parts that no one really cares about, it kind of lingers on some of those much slower story beats. Or it's like, why would you choose to linger on the slow stuff? And this movie makes such a big deal about all of his friends. Like, why do you want to kill Tiny Tim? Why is Tiny Tim? Why do you want to kill this poor kid? And they're like, why are you? And everyone asks him this, and he gets so annoyed. He's like, it's just a story. But like, it's not. As he realizes, it's not just a story. You know, like the inspiration he's taken. That's another thing, by the way, is he gets his entire inspiration from people he know, events that unfold in these few days. He's kind of stealing his plot
from everyday life.
Yeah, I guess that's a weird way to put it, but like, he's not. I guess I didn't walk away thinking, "Wow, Charles Dickens, excellent author," which he was.
Yeah.
You know, I walked away thinking, "Wow, Charles Dickens plagiarized everything." Not kidding, but it's. They could have done more with.
Welcome to the first vlog ever by Charles Dickens.
That's right. I thought they could have done more with the character of Charles Dickens in relationship to Scrooge, and they didn't. I don't think, given the material it was written from, I don't think they did the material justice. So that's what I wanted to start out with. What I wanted, my point, is there's no shortage of A Christmas Carol adaptions.
Mm-hmm.
What makes this one stand out? The answer is, unfortunately, I don't think it does.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I'm gonna purchase this on Blu-ray, because it took me a while to figure out, like, the whole movie. You know how when you look at someone, like, God, where have I seen that person from before? And then it hit me. I've seen this person in, he was the Beast. Beauty and the Beast. Like, it took a minute to realize that, but, like, the voice, like, where have I heard that voice before? I couldn't place it, but I wanted to figure it out and not look it up, I guess is what I'm saying, so.
So, in this movie, Charles Dickens is writing these characters, right, and developing them, and he's also interacting with them.
Yes. But they're not real. As he comes up with them, as he sees the inspiration for the characters, some are, you know, one's a store clerk, another one is his sister's husband's, and their son is, it's, they exist, they then exist in his reality, but the characters, as in a Christmas character, dressed the way they should be, they are in his study with him, where they follow him around, he's walking around town, or they're in his study as he's talking to them, kind of learning who they are as characters. I guess the process is what an author goes through. A good author, you know, the story takes him to the place where the characters tell themselves. You know what I mean? That's, so I guess in that way it's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's an awesome way to tell a story, and I guess to, you know, to really get into the mind of Charles Dickens in this movie, I guess. What would you think if someone wrote a story and you were in it, you didn't know, based it entirely off you or your life? How would you feel if you depending on how the story went?
I don't know. I mean, it's the movie I was thinking of was Stranger Than Fiction. Where Will Ferrell's character, he's literally listening, everything he does is narrated by a narrator, and he's a character in a story that, I mean, as it unfolds, there's a lot of twists and turns, but he is in a story, and his life is being narrated. And if I heard my life being narrated, I would ask two questions. First question, why is Morgan Freeman not narrating my life? I want Morgan Freeman. And two, I want to fight a dragon. Please make me fight a dragon.
So it's basically the Truman Show aspect.
Yeah, exactly, the Truman Show. Only the Truman Show was like led in a way, when this is like almost narrated, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
So that's what I liked about it, was the characters they're real for him. For him they're real, for him they're, you know, flesh and blood in there, but like for no one else, but like they tell him, they help him write the story. Yeah. I shouldn't say they tell him, I should say, he asks the right questions, they give him the answers that lead to how to put them on the page.
Yeah, okay.
And I was very impressed by that, actually. But
that's interesting.
I hope people do decide to watch, as I was watching this, and there's only three people in there, on mid-December, I was like, God, why are there not more people in this auditorium on a weekend in mid-December? What's going on here? But it's, I don't know how this gets missed. It is one of the greater mysteries to me. I guess, you know, the anticipation leading up to Star Wars, people might have been staying away for that week because, like, they know they're going to watch Star Wars. So, who knows, but...
Definitely. Oh, man. So, is it a movie you definitely recommend? You said you were going
to
buy it.
Well, I will buy it. I'll buy it on Blu-ray. I love the cast, so that, to me, that's all it usually takes to get me to buy a movie. But, it is... I say see everything. If you can see everything in a movie theater, see it, because that's the best way to watch anything, is in a movie theater. You know, the color is better, the screen is better, the sound is better. You know, the overall experience is much better than at your house. Regardless of whatever argument you might have, there is no argument that I mean, the movie theater business is always going to be way further ahead in technology than the home theater business.
Yeah.
So
well, when you're seeing a movie on a, I don't know how big a screen is, but you know, it's a special feeling you get in a movie theater that you don't get anywhere else.
I would agree. You know, it's just, especially if you have a drink and popcorn. It's just,
You're immersed in the movie. It's just, it's magic. That's what it always is to me, is watching a movie to me is magic. That's why my favorite place in the world is probably in a movie theater. So, yeah. To me, it's just, it's pure magic. And that's, I hope that I'm able to help people discover their own pure magic form of cinema. But for me, that it is, you know, the whole experience is the best for me. So, And moving on to the feature of this week is Just Getting Started, Tommy Lee Jones, Morgan Freeman, boy oh boy. What'd you think?
First off, these guys are, they've always been at the top, you know? I don't want to give them too much credit, but they're two big names, Tommy Lee Jones and Morgan Freeman. Morgan Freeman being 80 years old and Tommy Lee Jones being 71. And, I mean, obviously we're about to dive into this movie, but they're old and they're killing it, man. All respect to them. They're two legends. And, I don't know, man. It's interesting. It's interesting to see these two.
I would agree. There's a lot of going on here. So Ron Shelton is the director, and it's not... And if... This... He's done a lot of things very similar to this. For example, he's given us a couple of things that I really like, that I think are very much worth mentioning. And they are, Bull Durham is a great movie. The first movie he made, Bull Durham, he gave us White Man Can't Jump, he gave us Tin Cup, Dark Blue. But for all those movies he gave us that are pretty good, he also gave us... He gave us Play to the Bone, Hollywood Homicide, and unfortunately, Just Getting Started. Just Getting Started on the opposite, on the end of the spectrum, I'm sure he doesn't want the movie mentioned on.
Yeah.
Not in the same spectrum as Bull Durham, Tin Cup, and Dark Blue. So.
Oh, man. A lot of problems with this, huh?
I enjoyed it. I mean, any movie where you have Tommy Lee Jones and Morgan Freeman... It's great, you know. I mean, you really look. Those are two, like you said, they're legends. In this movie, they really are legends. You know, they're old guys that they've made their bones in this world. They don't need to impress anyone. Now it's just they're just kind of like up to mischief and hijinks. Which that's the biggest problem of the movie is one person is being targeted for assassination and never quite feels like it's a big deal.
Well, I mean, hey, you know, you got an old person, they're probably gonna die soon, or eventually. I hate to say that, but...
I mean, I'd be willing to bet they don't agree with you on that. I mean, they don't look at that as you do, but... There are a couple of scenes when Morgan's character, Duke, he is in Witness Protection Program, he's trying to lay low, and he's been found. Now, here's what kills me. One scene, there is a very deadly snake in his golf bag. And in another scene, the golf cart he's driving around explodes. And in the next scene, they're done worrying about it. It's like, do you not... Someone tried to poison you with a snake and blow up your golf cart, and we're not talking about that? Why are we not about that?
For one, Morgan Freeman, that golf cart was his life, you know? He was getting around on it. It was like his rascal.
He did love it.
And it was pretty nice. I wouldn't mind having a golf cart like that. Yeah, it's pretty badass.
It's a nice golf cart. It was a Hummer golf cart. Hummer H3. Whoa. Yeah, I saw the H3 logo on the front of it. I would really love to have one of those. But that's just so the minor problem. But joining Tommy Lee Jones and Morgan Freeman, Glenna Headley, Renee Russo, Jane Seymour, Cheryl Lee Ralph, and Joe Pantoliano. I wanted to mention the sad news before I mentioned the supporting cast, but so he has, the Duke lives in this, Morgan Freeman's character lives in this retirement home, retirement village, and he's kind of the king there, he's kind of the top dog there, he kind of runs things, and he has his three-man posse that kind of follows him wherever he goes. You know, they always get all the women, all the ladies. They're used to getting it. And then our buddy, Tommy Lee Jones, Leo,
rolls in and changes all of that. Changes the dynamic at the retirement home almost immediately. You know, all of a sudden, Duke has competition for the ladies, and it's just, you know, it's your classic comedy. You throw one wrench, and it completely upstarts the whole order for a while.
Yeah. I don't know, man. This, I have pretty mixed feelings on this movie. I did enjoy it. Was it worth it? I don't know, man. I don't know if it was worth the price of admission.
I don't know. I disagree. Tommy Lee Jones and Morgan Freeman, I think, are worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
Even though it's not what you want to see them in, it's still...
Yeah, exactly.
They're still there doing it.
It's the names, man. It's the names. And, I mean, maybe I'm being a little, a little standoffish on this movie, but I did enjoy it. There were a lot of funny scenes. One notably is the two Santa Claus scene. I thought that was just absolutely fantastic. One, yeah. Morgan Freeman, I think he should be, I think if we ever have a national Santa Claus person, it should be Morgan Freeman.
And Morgan Freeman,
hook that up soon.
Morgan Freeman will have been God, he will have been the president, and he will be the official Santa Claus.
God, Santa Claus.
President.
What hasn't he been?
He's been a lot. Yeah. He's been Alfred. No. Who? Oh, he was Lucius Fox in Batman. He's been a lot of cool things, man. He's been... Ooh, boy, Morgan Freeman had a hell of a run.
If your conscience voice isn't Morgan Freeman, you may have gone down the wrong path in life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was that guy in Shawshank who narrated everything. Yeah, he's just... Oh, man, Morgan Freeman. Morgan Freeman. More importantly, Morgan Freeman's voice should be a national treasure.
Oh, yeah.
Should be preserved in the history of time forever.
We should be sending his voice. We should be sending voice recordings of him out into outer space, just so they know that we're real and we know what's happening.
And so the Morgan Freeman's voice, his soothing voice, will calm the hostile aliens coming to kill us. Yeah.
So, wouldn't that be something? I don't know. That was my horrible impression.
That's Liam. That's Liam, though.
Yeah.
One thing I thought was funny was there's a line when Renee Rousseau makes an appearance. She comes in as Leo's boss, trying to make changes. Or she comes in as Leo's boss, but she has bosses above her calling the shots as well. She comes in and she upstarts the balance. She upsets the balance as well. You know, Leo and Duke are both fighting for her as well, and. One thing she says is, this is not the first time two men have fought over me. And even in the same director's, Ron Shelton's list, this is not the first time it happened to Tin Cup as well. I thought that was a pretty good line, to be honest. I really enjoyed that line. Mm-hmm.
It's not the first time. It's just dialogue.
Yeah, so. Not the first time two men have fought over me. I really did enjoy. And another thing, Renee Rousseau, I always forget, you know, Thor's mother, I always forget how good she is until I, like, she's very good. You know, she's not someone like you think of immediately as like one of the better ones, but when you see her, you're like, God, she really is good, you know?
Does she have it?
I don't know, Nick, you tell me. You're the one that does she still have it, meter?
Yeah, I think she does.
Yeah, I think she's got it. She's a good looking woman. For sure.
Her neighbor said, man, she's like Morgan Freeman, like Tommy Lee Jones. Had a great career. You know, like I said, you know, I did enjoy this movie, but now that we're talking about it, I'm asking myself, is this, I don't want to look at this movie as these stars that have gotten older and, maybe they burned a little too bright and now they're just memories of film fanatics, because they're not, but they, in the sense they are. Is this movie... This movie is not hurting their legacy, but it's not helping.
No, well, no. I mean, I don't. To them, I don't think it matters. They're to the point now where they're just like, who cares if it was exactly. The worst movie ever made or it's the best? Who cares?
And I think it's. I think it's more of they're having fun, you know.
Right.
I
think this is. You think Morgan Freeman didn't walk away with at least $10 million from this movie?
Oh, no.
You're insane. You're insane. Same with Tommy Lee Jones. He probably didn't get as much as Morgan Freeman, but he probably got, you know, multiple million dollars off of this. So, yeah. I mean, there's...
They look like they're having fun on screen. I'm sure this was a hoot to shoot. Wow.
A hoot to shoot? Yeah, you're that, probably not. You're probably not wrong about that. It seems like a lot of fun. I'm sure that the deleted scenes or the outtakes on the Blu-ray and DVD, I'm sure they are a lot of fun to watch. Especially with someone like Morgan Freeman, who doesn't, from the few outtakes I've seen him in, he doesn't. I saw him, like, live acting on Dark Knight Rises. On the lines that he screws up, he just stands there and, like, silently laughs to himself. He doesn't, like, burst out laughing. And that's some of the funny part of, like, watching him, like, be quiet and, like, laugh to himself. So.
I would pay to go see an 8-hour show with Morgan Freeman just talking.
Yeah, I think,
Live.
I think we all would pay to see that. That's,
Imagine the knowledge he could draw.
Well, when he's reading from the script, sure, imagine the knowledge he could drop. But he drops it in such a profound way, his voice. Oh, my goodness. Excellent, excellent. Go ahead, sorry.
To be honest to listeners, if you miss this movie, you'll be missing small jokes, little action. But in its own right, it's enjoyable, pulls itself through the gutter, you know?
It is enjoyable, and that's what keeps it, I think that's what makes it, you know, not... This movie is probably, if you have anything else to do, I'm going to recommend everything, but this is my lowest recommend as far as the content of the movie. But, I mean, it's, if you like Tommy Lee Jones and, if you like Tommy Lee Jones and you like Morgan Freeman, who in this movie are kind of like, they come from an era long past, they like to sing and dance, and they kind of remember that stage time and, like, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis almost. And that is them. That's those two characters, you know, that's how they work together.
Yes, and they work very well together.
By all means, but unfortunately, I don't think I could, this is not going to be one of my highest recommends. As far as, I would have even trouble paying $15 again to see this. I'd pay it once. I don't think I'd pay to see it again. Would I watch it on Netflix? Sure. I mean, it's one of those movies that, yeah, okay, I'll watch it while I eat and go to sleep. You know, why not? It doesn't.
If this movie came out 30 years prior and was a little different, you know, maybe there are two business icons going at each other. Probably a better movie. I don't know. Better plot. I give this movie two fake Santas.
Two fake Santas. Okay. I'll see you two fake Santas. I'll give it two Hummer H3 golf carts.
Okay.
And in that same spirit, the Clark Hayes is a movie you should probably watch. In the same spirit of just getting started, Every Which Way But Loose, 1978, James Fargo, Clint Eastwood, Sandra Locke, Jeffrey Lewis, Beverly D'Angelo, Walter Barnes, Manus the Orangutan. Philo Beto, a tough fighter and ex-trucker, and his orangutan travel to find his new singing girlfriend while his brother tags along, and they constantly clash with trouble and this bike gang. It's kind of a joke. I love this. I've had professors in the past who have hated this movie, and I've had professors who have loved this movie. But to me, the first reason to watch this movie, it's a very simple plot with a very likable protagonist. There's nothing wrong with it. It's almost just, you can sit down with a couple of friends, have a few beers, and just watch this movie and laugh. It's a comedy. You're meant to laugh at it. Number two, it's an adventure with an orangutan. How can you not be okay with that? Like, it's just fun. It's just fun. There's nothing complicated about it. There's no needlessly, you know, complicated green screen scenes or anything like that. It's just fun. And, of course, the scene, there is a diner scene where they're having dinner in the diner, and this biker gang starts to cause trouble, and they walk over, like in an old diner in, like, a 50s movie, how how a muscle guy would walk over and start heckling the guy with the hot girl at the table, and they're talking, and then Clint Eastwood would just, he almost takes a sigh and says, "I'm gonna deal with this," and he just goes out and fights the guys and comes back in, and that's it.
Hell yeah!
Almost like it didn't
happen.
You know what? American justice. That's Nick Morris justice right there. American justice.
If someone's bothering you when you're trying to have lunch, you tell them to meet you outside. You go outside, and you open up a can of whoop ass.
You don't bring any guns or knives, just fists. You know, you beat each other up for a minute, and then you like, and then you walk away from it. But in 2017, that would end with a gun shot to the head or a stab wound or, God, jeez.
A police scandal, man.
That's right. So, any which way but lose, and the sequel, Any Which Way You Can, is also a very fun extension of this movie. You definitely should check that out if you have access to it. Again, it's young Clint Eastwood. There's a gorilla. And I love Jeffrey Lewis. He's great. That's what one of the things that I love about that movie is his Eastwood's brother, Jeffrey Lewis. Eastwood's character's brother, Jeffrey Lewis. Wonderful. I just watched it recently, and I remembered why I fell in love with it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank you for listening to our episode. As always, you can subscribe on iTunes. You can have it set to download automatically to your iTunes, or if you're an Android user, you can download directly from Podbean. You can check out the Twitter page at the same name, For the Love of Cinema, and there will be a new Facebook page up under the same name, For the Love of Cinema. It's not up yet, but it will be up soon. You can check that out when it comes up. And as always, thank you very much for listening, and I apologize for the minor construction in the background. I know I put it in the episode description, but we pushed ourselves in the corner. We had to record a certain time, and that was being done in the background. So I'm very sorry if that was distracting, not my intent. But again, thank you very much for listening.